Hey, Hang Up listeners, you're about to hear a preview of this week's episode. The coronavirus pandemic has made it a challenge for us to do this show in a financially sustainable way. Because of that, we are temporarily changing how we do the podcast. Every other week, the full Hang Up and Listen will be for Slate Plus members only, with just the first segment available to non-members. If you want to hear every word of every episode we do, then you need to subscribe to Slate Plus. It's only $35 for the first year, and your membership will help assure that we can continue to do Hang Up and Listen for a long time. If you want to subscribe, go to slate.com/hangupplus. That's slate.com/hangupplus. And thank you all for listening.
The following podcast contains naughty language.
Hi, I'm Stefan Fatsis, the author of the books Word Freak and A Few Seconds of Panic, and this is Hang Up and Listen for the week of June 29th, 2020. On this week's show, we'll talk about the decision of the New England Patriots to sign quarterback Cam Newton to maybe succeed Tom Brady. We'll also examine the new wave of on-field expression in pro sports, from women's soccer players kneeling en masse to the NBA letting players put social justice messages on the backs of their jerseys. Finally, we'll interview Javaro Edwards, the interim athletic director at Morehouse College, about the historically black school's decision to cancel fall sports because of the coronavirus. Oh, we'll also talk about the original decision, LeBron James's 2010 Taking My Talents to South Beach TV show, which was the subject of an ESPN TV show over the weekend. I'm in Washington. Joining me from Palo Alto, California, is Slate staff writer and Slow Burn Season 3 host, Joel Anderson. What's up, Joel?
I'm good, man. How are you doing, Stefan? The beard's coming in great. Looks good.
Thanks. Thank you. Appreciate that. You had another shockingly bad food take this past week that I want to ask you about.
Oh, I don't believe it, but what are you referring to?
Pretending that mustard isn't the only proper hot dog condiment, main hot dog condiment. What the fuck is with people in ketchup on hot dogs?
Mustard is disgusting, first of all. But second of all, I'm not saying that I prefer ketchup on hot dogs. I'm just saying that, like, when you go to a hot dog place, they tend to have a ketchup dispenser. So obviously those two things go together. I'm not saying that that's something I commonly do, but like, I understand
like no,
it.
Like there's no mustard dispenser there? Where are you?
There is, but I think mustard is terrible. I mean, does mustard taste good?
I'm moving on here. I like mustard. Mustard is good.
Mustard's delicious.
That is our friend Gene Demby of NPR. He's the co-host of the podcast Code Switch. Good to have you back, Gene.
What's going on, y'all? I'm so glad to be here with y'all.
We got to congratulate you, man. Code Switch.
Yeah, man.
Code Switch at number one on Apple Podcasts and iTunes.
He beat Joe Rogan.
That's unbelievable.
Oh, my God. Such a strange moment. I wish it would have happened under, you know, different socio-political circumstances. But
yeah, but I think Shireen Marisol Meraji, your co-host, she said, we're like the gym on New Year's, only for racism.
Everybody's trying to catch up.
Yeah. Trying to get ready. Put that on a t-shirt, Gene.
Yeah. Who are the two most famous people that have retweeted you and engaged with you now as a result of your newfound fame?
Oh, man. So we got shouted out by J-Lo, which is bananas. And I don't know if this is a retweet, but Reese Witherspoon put us in her newsletter. So shout out to her. Good little lie.
Yeah. Didn't Shireen say something like that actress or something?
That actress, some right? Actress. That actress. It was like, I think people know who Reese Witherspoon is, but you know, maybe not. I don't know.
As everyone has figured out, Josh Levine, Slate's national editor, author of The Queen, host of Slow Burn Season 4, David Duke. Josh is off this week. Episodes 1 through 3 of Slow Burn are up. Episode 4 drops on July 8th. But Josh tells me he's got something special planned for this week to tide everyone over. If you haven't started listening to Josh Slow Burn, you need to. It is fantastic. But don't listen right now. Listen to us first. It's been 24 days since NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell took the bold step of saying that Black Lives Matter, which are 24 more days that Colin Kaepernick is unsigned, though NFL.com is now reporting that, and I am quoting here, there are conversations happening with friends and associates of the free agent quarterback. Oof. any second. While we hold our breaths waiting for Cap to get a job on Sunday night, Cam Newton did. He signed a one-year team-friendly contract with the New England Patriots. Newton is 31. He's coming off three surgeries in less than 3 years, one to a foot, two to his throwing shoulder, which are both important body parts for a quarterback. Gene, New England post Tom Brady was assumed to be turning over its offense to second-year QB Jarrett Stidham, but you knew there was no way that Bill Belichick was going to do that, at least not without some competition from someone other than 34-year-old Brian Hoyer, who has a job, while Cap, who is 32, does not. Cam Newton didn't have a lot of options, Gene. The Patriots didn't have a lot of quarterback. Financially and football-y, Bill Barnwell of ESPN said this might be the bargain of the offseason. Do you agree?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, so Cam obviously is a diminished version of himself, right? I mean, he's not the 2015 MVP Cam Newton. But, I mean, considering just how few people, like, play quarterback at an elite level, like, he's one of the few people who can get there, like in the world who can get there. And so getting him for what's like the league minimum and this incentive laden contract, it makes a lot of sense for him. Obviously, like, he gets to compete. I mean, they're not beating the Chiefs, but he gets to compete for a Super Bowl in the next year, which an opportunity he probably wouldn't have had anywhere else. And for Bill Belichick, you can see sort of the calculations for him. I mean, you know, he's already been in the game for what, a couple decades now. Like, his window is not going to be open forever. How much time does he want to spend, you know, coaching up a second year dude who's never started before to a place where they can, like, that person is a competent helmsman for Super Bowl contender? I mean, this just makes a lot of sense. And Cam is still like a really, I mean, I think we forget how good Cam was at the peak of his powers. I mean, he was a dual threat, right? I mean, he had a cannon for an arm. He was obviously a humongous human being. He's obviously diminished from that. But, I mean, he is still, like, light years better than most of the quarterbacks in the NFL, even with all his diminution.
Yeah, it's just hard to know what's real here, right? Are we going to see the Cam Newton of our memories? You know, the one that captivated us, like, in 2010 and in 2015, you know, this one-of-a-kind athletic marvel who, you know, I mean, you know, struggled with, I thought for a number of years that the complaints about his accuracy was sort of racist, but actually the numbers show that yes, no, he does have some difficulties with accuracy. But that's the thing, like, are we talking about that earlier Cam, that, you know, unprecedented athlete playing quarterback? Are we talking about the guy who's been injured basically every year since they played in the Super Bowl? And so it's hard to understand even still how Cam was still out there. I mean, because he's still young, still has a chance to recover. It's not like he's the only quarterback that's ever been injured for multiple years and had opportunities. But we're talking about a dude who, I mean, until the Patriots stepped up, it was conceivable that Cam wasn't going to even play in the NFL this year.
Which is bananas, yeah.
Which
yeah.
is ridiculous. And yeah. So this is the part that I think of when I think of the racism, because it's like the sort of racist double standard applied to guys like Cam and Jameis and obviously Cap, while a bunch of mediocrities take up space on NFL rosters, right? Because it was Akeem Nicks of the Bears who said a few weeks ago how he knew that Cap wasn't playing again is when they signed Mike Glennon, right? And in my lifetime, black QBs like Cam, who've been athletic, you know, where people think that they lead with their athletic talent and they sort of overlook all the other things that you need to maintain in the league. So I think about a guy like Vince Young, who was done at 28, Aaron Brooks done at 30, Cordell Stewart done as a starter at 29. Robert Griffin III isn't even 30 years old. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of this belief that he's done with the league. And they have these very, you know, these black quarterbacks that people consider to be dual threats have like these really short runs in the league, and they don't get a chance to sort of see out the second half of their career when the game slows down. They, you know, they've seen all the defenses they're going to see in the NFL. So that's what I'm really interested to see with Cam now. Like, what is the second half of his career going to be like? Is he going to get a second half of his career?
Right. And can we, for Cam, you know, unlikely, but can people get over these stereotypes about black quarterbacks who suffer an injury, who don't have the same, you know, what are the sort of gifts that they are bestowed with and credited with early in their career, that, you know, we're all, you know, we all want to see Lamar Jackson run. And we want to discount the fact that, oh, you mean he's also an incredibly accurate passer and is developing as a pocket quarterback? We don't want to see that. We don't want to acknowledge that, as, you know, a lot of white fans don't. So that stereotype is ingrained. And the other stereotype with Cam that I think we're going to have to see if people can let go of, is this idea that he's some sort of prima donna, which is also rooted in racism. Mike Freeman, sports writer, tweeted over the weekend or last night on Sunday night after Cam was signed, for people who've never interviewed Cam or any of his teammates and only traffic in stereotypes about him, note the following. One, Cam has an excellent work ethic. Two, he's a good teammate. Three, he's smart. This has been my Cam talk. The fact that someone needs to step up and say these things is outrageous, and it reflects where we are as a culture, as sports fans.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Yeah, I mean, it's, when you think about this, it's kind of wild. Like, is there a more sort of awkward mismatch between a quarterback and a fan base, right? I mean, because Cam, it's like, yes, Cam is a black quarterback. Cam is also like a really eccentric dude. Like, I went to his Instagram page right after, you know, to see like what was happening on his page. And it was illegible because he like wrote it in some kind of weird font that made like the umlauts, there are umlauts above every letter. So I was like, well, I actually can't read this. But Cam is like a really weird dude. He gives like sort of, you know, sometimes like impenetrable press conferences, right?
Good hats.
And hats. Yeah, hats. Just like Pharrell Williams type, like, gigantic Ranger hats. But if you were somebody who was already inclined to think of black quarterbacks in this way, Cam would ignite, he would just activate all your antenna. He would just like trip all your wires.
Right. Yeah. It's so weird, right? Because I think you mentioned the other day that it's hard to imagine a weirder match, right? You just, like I said, between these fan bases. And then I thought about that. I was like, okay, well, Randy Moss has played for the Pats. Corey Dillon has played for the Pats. Aqib Talib has played for the Pats, right?
But that's true. That's all true.
Yeah, guys are perceived as malcontents, but that's different from quarterback, obviously, right?
Ocho Cinco.
Yeah,
Ocho Cinco, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Ocho Cinco, right. But then again, that's totally different from being a quarterback. And maybe the reason that it seems so weird is because the Pats have had basically unprecedented quarterback stability over the last 30 years. Because, I mean, they've had Brady for 20, but they had Drew Bledsoe for like 8 before then.
The new Bledsoe for.
Yeah, right. So we don't even know what it's like. They've never even been in the market for a dude like Cam or anybody like that. So like to even flirt with a Lamar Jackson, right? So that's the thing that I'm sort of interested in seeing, like how Boston responds, you know, if you go on Twitter, I mean, the best jokes going right now are like Boston fans reacting to like Cam Newton throwing an interception or something like that, right? but I mean, I really hope, I mean, I don't want to have to root for the Patriots, but I would like to see Cam put to bed a lot of this narrative around him and around black athletic quarterbacks at this age. Like, I think this is a really good spot for him. And, you know, man, I mean, I can't think of a better landing spot for him at this point in his career right now.
It's in my notes, Joel. How are you going to root for Cam and against the Patriots? There's got to be a way to do this, right? The problem.
I've done that. I've done that before.
You've done that.
Vince Young in the University of Texas. That's the only other time. But go ahead.
It's a cognitive dissonance, man. Can you handle it? The thing that I think people are going to sort of skate over is that this might be some sort of problem for Bill Belichick, right? That the challenge of bringing in a player who may be on the downside of his career, who's looking to rebound after having Tom Brady for 20 years at the quarterback position, is going to be some sort of issue. But, you know, Tom Brady was a fucking weirdo. The Patriots had Gronkowski. I mean, the notion that Cam Newton is some sort of distraction is offensive. I don't think Belichick cares. Belichick wants to make sure that they can get to 10-6 next year with a shitty receiving core. They've bulked up their running game. They've invested in their offensive line, but he has to make sure that they can make the playoffs and try to win that division, which will be a lot more entertaining, frankly. Buffalo's pretty good.
Yeah, Buffalo was surprisingly good last year. It was very strange. What a marvelous time to be alive right now. But no, I think you're right. I mean, obviously they've changed the offense. It looks like they've changed the personnel to be more like in line with Cam's strengths. And I mean, it wasn't like Tom Brady was that good like last year, right? I mean, there was like a lot of plea copping for Tom Brady last year. For a while now, like, I mean, he's been an above average quarterback for the last 2 seasons or so, right? If that, like at some point, it's not even that, right? So it's not as if like there's just going to be this huge drop off between Tom Brady at, how old is he, 41? And Cam Newton at 31.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the weird thing about it, right? Because not only are there are some people that cover the NFL that are implying that Cam Newton will have to beat out Jared Stidham to get on the field, which is, I mean, it's absurd on its face, no. Right? Right. And then the other piece of it is like, why, I don't, you know, going from an aging, declining Tom Brady to a motivated and healthier Cam Newton, who could be reaching the peak of his career. Like, it doesn't seem, that doesn't seem like a drop off for the Pats at all. It seems like they may have upgraded the position. And then just think about it. I mean, they've got Josh Daniels, and whatever you want to say about Josh Daniels, fine. But it's not like Brady at this point in his career was a one of a kind QB talent, but they still got a lot of production out of him. And, you know, I mean, he made Tim Tebow seem like a moderately competent NFL quarterback. So you got Josh McDaniels working with Cam Newton, and we know that the Patriots are really good at adjusting on the fly, yep. You know, figuring out how to best utilize their talent. I mean, man, I just, you know, I would, I think, I don't want Patriots fans to be happy or excited in any circumstance, but like, I don't know how you couldn't be if you're looking at this with an open mind.
And then you look at the financial part of this, and there's just zero reason not to do this. Michael Jannetty, who runs Spotrac, which looks at the cap stuff and salary stuff, said that even if Cam maxes out, it would be $7.5 million. The Patriots will be paying a total of $9 million for three quarterbacks. There are 19 quarterbacks, he wrote, set to make more than that alone this year.
Wow. That's crazy.
That's a bargain. I mean, it's a bargain for a dude who could be like, you know, like if he made an All-Pro this year, nobody would be, it wouldn't be like inconceivable, right?
He didn't even need to be an All-Pro. He needs to get them literally to 10-6 and into the playoffs.
Absolutely.
I mean, and what's the stretch here? I mean, in his division alone, I mean, the other quarterbacks are Josh Allen, not the good defensive end. You know what I mean? They're playing for the Raiders. You have Sam Darnold and Tua Tagovailoa or Ryan Fitzpatrick. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a stretch to imagine this working out really well, but for the fact that we may not have football at all. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, that's the other piece of this is that, well, Cam's going to look great with the Pats, but I mean, we have, I mean, what makes us think that we're going to actually see football this fall?
No,
you know what I mean? But for the fact that we're going through the the motions.
We're going through the motions. The NFL still is saying training camps are going to start near the end of July. I mean, the end of July is like 3 weeks away.
That's tomorrow, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I see no evidence to believe that the NFL can possibly start on time on September 10th. But, you know, NFL's going to NFL, and they will turn every training camp into an Orlando-like NBA bubble if it means getting these games onto television.
That seems like such a bad idea. Not even to go down this rabbit hole, but like the Orlando bubble is like one bubble, right? I mean, we're talking about, you know, 32 NFL teams having to manage and administer their own, all these protocols on their own. I mean, that is an accident waiting to happen. Right. And we're also talking about, I mean, orders of magnitude more people involved, right? I mean, you know, yeah. NFL roster is what, 50 plus people, 50 plus mm-hmm. players.
Right. Training camp's like 80 players.
That's exactly right. I mean, this is not going to go well.
It's a wormhole worth going down because, I mean, it's just, we're just all talking about what the football season is going to look like and who's going to do this. And, you know, Cam's going to be a great fit and Tom Brady, he's got a lot to prove. And it's just like, shit, man, we might not see them for another, you know, 16 months. If that, and that could be generous. You know what I mean? Like, we've shown no evidence that we've got this pandemic under control. It's like especially right now. So it's just like to assume that we're going to get to see Cam with the Patriots, I mean, whatever. I mean, which actually makes it more ridiculous. Like, why doesn't somebody just sign Cap right now? Because, I mean, which, you don't ever have to play him. You know what I mean?
You
know, you could
get all of the credit for being the team that was brave enough to sign Colin Kaepernick without ever having had to, like, do any of the, you know, the on-field stuff or whatever.
So, right, absolutely.
Yeah, he might ever actually play for him, yeah.
Before we end the segment, we should also probably mention that it was a little on the nose that this news broke at the same time that the Patriots were punished for cheating again. the NFL fined the Patriots $1.1 million, took away a third-round pick in 2021 because their television crew was filming the sidelines of a game between the Bengals and the Browns last year.
I mean,
the Pats, man.
There's nothing more symbolic about like just the rot and the corruption within our country than the fact that like the Patriots get to succeed and do like whatever, and nothing deters them. Even all these accusations and substantiated allegations of them cheating, and they just kind of glide through it, and they sign Cam Newton at the end of the day. You know what I mean? It just seems so appropriate for like the moment that we're in right now.
Absolutely, and they still won the news cycle somehow.
That was a preview of this week's episode of Hang Up and Listen. To hear the whole thing, and we promise the rest of it will be good, sign up for Slate Plus at slate.com/hangupplus. It's only $35 for the first year, and your membership will help us sustain this show. That's slate.com/hangupplus.
Hello, listener. Dahlia Lithwick here, host of Amicus, that's Slate's podcast on the courts and the law and democracy and the rule of law. This May, our team will be publishing a special project that we are calling How Originalism Ate the Law. This neutral and academic-sounding methodology of looking at the law is, in fact, anything but neutral. Originalism is to the conservative legal movement what peanut butter is to jelly. As we're going to show you over the course of this project, originalism has been both cover and calling for conservative justices and judges to radically overhaul the lives of millions of Americans. And while they claim to be the apolitical interpreters of the Constitution and its authors' intents, they have overturned Roe, radically expanded gun rights, and eviscerated voting rights. Across Slate.com and the Amicus podcast, we're going to be tackling questions like, where did originalism come from? Why has it taken over? Are progressive originalists really a thing? And am I allowed to have an opinion on originalism? Spoiler, the answer to that last question, you are. To celebrate the launch of this big project, we are running a special 2-week-long free trial of Slate Plus on Apple Podcasts. As a member, you'll get exclusive episodes from How Originalism Ate the Law, plus ad-free listening to all of your favorite Slate podcasts. Join now by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen.